several tables, heavily laden with food and drink that was constantly replenished by the numerous slaves of his household. Scores of young nobles sat on long benches, laughing and singing as they drank the wine from his cellars and ate the mutton and beef from his herds. 10 years before, an earlier generation of rich men's sons had come uninvited to his palace and helped themselves to his possessions. He had slaughtered them to a man. He lifted his gaze to the murals on the walls. They were barely discernible in the shadows, but he knew them well enough. The newest, spread across the whole of the east wall, celebrated the victory of the Greeks over the Trojans, the centerpiece of which was the wooden horse, the ruse that had sprung from his fertile mind like Athena from the head of Zeus. He had spent many a night looking at the slightly comical figures of armed men storming through the burning ruins of Troy, remembering the awfulness of that night and the long years of siege that had preceded it. But this evening his gaze was drawn to a different mural. The painting on the north wall was from before his father's reign. The colours had faded, and the images were veiled by years of grime and smoke, but the war between the Olympians and the giants was still recognisable. Huge figures hurled thunderbolts and boulders at each other, or grappled face to scowling face like wrestlers. It was a battle between good and evil, rule and misrule, divine law and worldly anarchy. The gods were easily identified, as were the giants, to those who knew them. But at the centre of the fight was a figure recognised by anyone who cared to stop and look. He had inhabited the borders between order and chaos, and known both mortality and immortality. He had saved humanity from the destructive power of the giants, only to leave it under the indifferent custody of the gods. His name was Heracles. Odysseus's gaze wandered again, this time falling on a man seated against one of the pillars. His stomach bulged over his belt, and in his lap was a tortoiseshell lyre. Though several years younger than the king, he was balding on top, and the thin hair that remained to him was already turning grey. His eyes were half closed and looked shrivelled as he appeared to glance around himself. But he had lost his sight many years ago, and the slow, curious movements of his head were led by his nose and ears as he read the smells in the great hall and deciphered the sounds that filled it. The man's name was Omeros. He had fought in the ranks of the Ithacan army at Troy, losing his sight on the return voyage. Now he served his king by singing songs about the great events of history, the wars and the romances, the crimes of men and the retribution of the gods, the tragedies and comedies of human existence. And for the previous 2 nights he had stilled the hall with a new song. Before the Trojan War, it had been the greatest story ever told, about the greatest hero ever to have lived. About the man in the mural, Heracles. But Omeros was no mean peddler of songs. Whereas other bards thrilled their audiences with tales of Heracles's amazing strength and courage, Omeros sang about a man who had killed his own children in a fit of madness, losing his wife's love and destroying his reputation in a single night of mindless destruction. He sang, too, of the guilt that had driven him to seek absolution, only to be told by the gods that he must become a slave to his hated cousin Eurystheus, for whom he had to complete 10 impossible labours. In many ways, Heracles's life resonated with Odysseus's own, and the thought of hearing the final chapter of his story filled him with excitement and dread. He looked aside at Hyperetus, who had served beside him through the long years of the war. He was laughing at something his wife was telling him, happy at last after all he had endured. Then the king turned his head to look at the woman seated beside himself, the woman he had won a war for and sailed 10 years to return to. Penelope was absorbed in conversation with Telemachus, their only son, oblivious to her husband's gaze. But as he looked at them, he counted himself blessed. For all his hardships, he had not suffered as Heracles had done. He had not lost his family. He reached out and laid his hand on hers. She turned and smiled at him, as beautiful as...